Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show. Today is Tuesday, November 22nd, 2022. We are now 2 weeks past the midterm elections, and we still don't know what the layout of the House is. We actually don't specifically know the layout of the Senate either, but we're pretty sure that we know what the balance is going to be, except for the runoff election, and that is a legit reason not to know, because, of course, Georgia has its own rules. There will be a runoff election on December 6th. It's the reason why we don't actually have the full balance of the Senate, but we do know that right now Democrats have 50 seats and they'll control the Senate because regardless of how that runoff turns out, because of course they have 50 seats now and Kamala Harris provides a tiebreaker for votes for controlling the Senate. So therefore we kind of already know where we're going to be at. We're either going to be at Democrats at 50 or Democrats at 51. Either way, they have control of the Senate. We know that the Alaska race is going to produce a Republican, because right now it's down between Lisa Murkowski, Republican, and Kelly Chewbacca, Republican. And runoff voting will take place tomorrow, actually. Not runoff voting, I should say, but runoff, the ranked choice voting will take place tomorrow. The process for counting that will take place tomorrow. We'll know then what happens in that Senate race, which Republican ends up in the Senate. Right now, Lisa Murkowski's got a very thin lead, but the third party the Democrat in that race got 10% of the vote, a little over 10% of the vote. We can probably expect most of that vote to break towards Murkowski. Murkowski's almost certainly going to be reelected to her seat in the Senate. And we know that Mary Peltola is going to get the House seat because the Republican vote split pretty evenly between Sarah Palin and Nick Begich. And Nick Begich came in a narrow third, and most of his support is probably not going to go to Sarah Palin. It will probably either not show up at all, or it will go to Peltola, and that means that Peltola should win that. She only needs about 3,500 votes out of Begich's 60,000 or so votes. There's not going to be much hope that Palin's going to end up winning that race either. That leaves us with a couple of California races still left to determine, and one of which hasn't had an update since Friday. And in both of those cases, Republicans are leading. They called the race for Valadao last night in California. That's a Republican incumbent. So we're at 220 if you count Lauren Boebert's win in Colorado, as Adam Frisch has already conceded that race. And concessions are not legal. I mean, they're not legally binding, I should say. So if for some reason the recount, which is statutorily required in this case, if some reason the recount comes up with a different number, then yes, Adam Frisch will win. But Adam Frisch is pretty sure, and people in Colorado are pretty sure, that even with the current gap of 552 votes being as narrow as it is, that the recount here is probably only going to change dozens in that gap count. So they're all pretty confident that Boebert has actually won that seat narrowly, but still has won the seat. So we don't know exactly what the status of the House will be. We do know it'll be in Republican hands. It's either going to be 220, 221, or 222, in which case the gap is wide enough to where attempts to try to sway people into crossing the aisle just simply won't be fruitful. So that won't even be an issue. And frankly, I think that the people who are in the majority right now, based on how little impact minority party members have in the House of Representatives, probably just want to stick with the majority for right now. Other news that's out there today, we've got a lot of it out there. Apparently, Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg wants to resurrect the Stormy Daniels hush money issue to try to figure out how to charge Donald Trump with some sort of crime in that. I have an analysis of that. Andy McCarthy, our friend over at National Review, is just as skeptical about this as I am, for one big reason, which is that the statute of limitations apparently, arguably at least, has already expired, and the Manhattan DA's office had previously determined that they don't have a case here, both of which would come into play if they tried to present one, because the defense would be able to argue that, A, the statute of limitations had already eliminated this, and B, that there wasn't any fraud, any actionable fraud. And I'm not even sure what the fraud would be, because fraud is apparently what they're pursuing here. This is a private arrangement to shut somebody up. It's a non-disclosure agreement. There's all sorts of non-disclosure agreements. The issue when it first came up was whether or not it was a basically a campaign contribution that went undeclared and that would have been illegal under the circumstances. And the federal, the federal authorities decided that it was a loser of a case. Michael Cohen was trying to press that, but Michael Cohen had all sorts of witness issues, all sorts of credibility issues, and they didn't even bother to try to cut a deal with him. They forced him to take a 3-year sentence, or got convicted of, convicted and took a 3-year sentence. And Stormy Daniels now owes, as Andy McCarthy also points out, Stormy Daniels also owes Donald Trump nearly $300,000 in attorney's fees. So she's not going to come across as the most credible witness here either. I'm not sure what the play is here other than to just, you know, sort of pander to the progressives that Bragg outraged by dropping the earlier case against Donald Trump over the objections of his prosecutors. That was in February. And I suspect that Bragg is looking to make amends here by offering up a pointless probe of something that didn't go anywhere back when it had some legs. And furthermore, is basically the same case that the U.S. government prosecuted against John Edwards and got nowhere with a jury either. There's lots of reasons to criticize the payoff, but she got paid. He got silence. He got the silence that he was looking for at least a little bit of time. And frankly, I'm not sure who would have gotten defrauded in that other than the Federal Election Commission. And that's not Manhattan DA's jurisdiction anyway. So it's a sort of a desperate attempt, I think, here by Bragg to sort of burnish his record. Lots more stuff on the site today. And of course, I got lots of headlines going on too. I love doing the headlines, by the way. I hope you're enjoying the headlines because I love doing them. So much fun. I get a chance to comment a little bit on each of them if I want. And I think that I'm enjoying the comments that are coming from our VIP members. We're going to have a message about VIP at the end of today's podcast, so stick around for that. David Strom has something about a Wall Street Journal exclusive that OPEC might increase oil production, or they might cut it, or they may keep it the same. I'm not sure what this exclusive actually has to say. Neither is David Strom. So he's writing about that today. He also wrote about Adam Kinzinger being a broken soul. There's a really good post last night from John Sexton. You should really read it. And often I don't get a chance to talk about John because I'm doing morning review here. But this was from last night about the Black Hebrew Israelites are a real problem for the left. And it's a very good post. It's not long. You should read it. And you should read everything that John's doing. John's doing a great job for us here at Hot Air, and I feel like sometimes I don't mention him often enough because I'm focusing on the morning posts. Jazz Shaw, of course, has got some great posts up as well this morning. He's got one about New York City declaring war on Pizza Rat again. But I think more substantively, that one's fun, by the way. You should read that one. But more substantively, he writes about the Pennsylvania warning sign for Democrats that many of us missed. And I saw this story go by yesterday and didn't get a chance to write about it. So Jazz picked up on it. It is an important story. So be sure to check that out. I also am taking a look at the firing of James LaPorta by the Associated Press over that erroneous report that the missile that hit Poland was Russian rather than part of Ukraine's anti-aircraft system. In either case, it would have been erroneous, but it does. The firing here doesn't smell right. James LaPorta reported off of a single source, and the Associated Press is saying, "Well, that violates our policies," but those policies are enforced by editors. And the editors in this case passed the story along and sent out the alert. And you can blame James LaPorta for only getting one source on the story. And that might or might not be fair. But the editors aren't being punished for this. And they're the ones who actually approved this and sent it out. And they're the ones who are tasked with enforcing that type of policy. Plus, as apparently the Washington Post reported, this is a source. I mean, James LaPorta's source was obviously very wrong, and that was a serious issue because that type of report can provoke wars, which is the reason why you don't go out with that unless you've really confirmed it. But this is a source that has given LaPorta good information in the past. So I'm a little curious here about this. It really looks like the Associated Press is trying to do some scapegoating on behalf of its editors. And as Sean Davis points out, Sean Davis from The Federalist points out, it's not like the Associated Press is all that particular about single sourced stories when it fits their political agenda. So I really think that maybe we should reserve judgment on James LaPorta until we get a lot more information as to what the hell is going on over at the Associated Press. So that's there. And we didn't get a chance to talk about this, but of course, Andrew Malcolm and I often talk about media bias and strange media practices. That's coming up right after this, so stay tuned. Andrew Malcolm of RedState.com, the Prince of Twitter, and I do our weekly review of the top stories, the top media stories, especially in this case, the top Biden stories of this week. So stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for one last message about our VIP Gold program. And don't forget that tomorrow we'll be doing the VIP Gold chat with Cam Edwards of BearingArms.com, the most fun hour of my week, and I think anybody's week. Thanks for watching. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show. Joining us, as always, on Tuesdays, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm. Welcome back.
Good to be here, sir, and happy holiday week.
Well, happy holiday week to you, too. I hope that you are going to be enjoying yourself in the lush valley that you live in Tennessee.
I do, but I'm not in the valley. I'm on a mountaintop.
But well, you overlook the valley.
I overlook the valley. That's right. That's right. But it's wonderful. The Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday. Absolutely favorite. So
love them, too.
Yeah.
You Canadian, you get two things.
I get two of them. That's right. Exactly right. Exactly right. I get it's usually Columbus Day and then whatever this is, the third Thursday in November or something.
Yeah.
We used to do that in my house. It's, as I said to somebody else earlier, it's great for me. It's too bad for the turkeys.
There you go. Yeah. President Biden just pardoned the turkey.
Oh, yeah. Did you read the text?
No, I didn't. I just know that it happened. I haven't read the text. Why? What did he do this time?
I was saving it for one of the jokes, but we could do it now if you want.
No. Let's save it for the end. Let's okay.
Keep everybody on their edge of their seat.
That's right.
What stupidity the president said today.
Exactly. Because there's one every day. So yeah,
there's at least one.
So we talked last week after the midterms, of course. We don't need to rehash all of the midterms. I just will note, though, for the record, that we're still not done with the midterms, because there's still five races left to call. They haven't counted the votes yet in five races. They haven't counted all the votes, at least in five races.
That's amazing.
I
don't know. They've been doing it the same day everywhere, even in a national election, for decades. Now all of a sudden there's a problem.
It's because of the mail-in balloting. And
maybe they should reconsider. Yeah.
I think they should reconsider. You've only got 71% of the vote counted in California's third district, which is in the Sierra Nevada, and only 86% of it in California's Bakersfield area. Got 95% of it in California's Merced area. And I'm starting to recognize a pattern here that California races seem to be getting counted awfully slowly.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I've got a friend, you know, Kira Davis, right?
She's running
for the school board. And I think they just passed 40% of the vote counted.
Where does she live? What school board is she going for?
Orange, or one of the ones in Orange County somewhere.
She's got a good shot of it in Orange County. Kira's terrific. We'd lose her at Red State. Maybe not. She wouldn't necessarily have to recuse herself from a school board position, but no.
Yeah.
So
no, she's a gem, and she's the producer for my Red State podcast commentaries each week. So,
well, if she gets that school board position, she might have to, you know, grade your work.
That's right. Exactly. It's very scary.
Very scary stuff. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Although, let's face it, your work over there is pretty doggone awesome as it is. This week, you're focused on, first off, you're focused on your second Thanksgiving this year. But other than that, you focused on Donald Trump's announcement and Joe Biden's general status. And your Malcolm on the Right is about Joe Biden, too. We'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, Adam and I had a debate about, we're having an ongoing debate. We had a state dinner as the stakes of this bet.
Oh,
I'm betting that Ron DeSantis gets in regardless of what Donald Trump does. And of course, now Donald Trump's actually officially in the race. So I'm betting that Ron DeSantis still gets in. And Adam Baldwin thinks he waits until after Trump's no longer an issue. Where do you come down on that, Andrew? I know that your VIP column this week says Trump needs to earn the 24 GOP nomination. And I think going up against Ron DeSantis is how he needs to earn it.
Well, yeah, Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley or anybody else who wants to jump in. I guess Mike Pence is maneuvering. I think a lot of people have great respect for what Donald Trump did as president. He did so much, and the column includes a fairly long list of the achievements, including crushing ISIS and income tax cuts and historic, unprecedented energy independence, and several other impressive things. So he's earned the right, it seems to me, to run with everybody else. And anybody else who wants to run. Now, some people may get scared, like Adam thinks, and not take him on. DeSantis is going to be done with his second term limits, right? In 26. So he's going to have 2 years, but he's only 44, so he's got plenty of time. I just think there's a lot. I think there's a mounting, not resistance, but reluctance about Trump. His base is incredibly loyal, but it's dwindled. It has melted some, and understandably so. He's been out of office. He can't be doing the impressive things that he did do when he was in office. And all we can see is, or hear, is his rallies when he goes back to 2020 again. And that's not going to do it for 2024. You gotta be looking ahead. So his base has dwindled some. I don't know if it's enough to defeat him, but if there's a big Republican field like there was in 2016, he could come in, you know, with what, 38, 40% of the vote, a plurality, but everybody else splits the rest of it. He's going to be angry that people get in. And Ron DeSantis, I think, is handling it perfectly, which is basically ignoring it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that to me is how you handle it. You just put your own agenda forward and you don't respond, right? I mean, he did kind of respond in the moment when, you know, with the...
But he's not going to come back and go, oh, no, you too, you are, no, I am, all that stuff. In fact, there's a, I guess it's separate from him, but there is a Ron DeSantis pro PAC, which started running ads in Iowa.
You tweeted that out. Yes, I saw that today. I wanted to ask you.
It's a pretty good ad. You know, it's not as good as Morning in America with Reagan, but it's pretty good about decision time.
Right. Yeah. Now, and look, I mean, I think that's one of the things about PACs, right? Is that you can have your fingerprints off of it and say, oh, no, that wasn't.
Yeah. Right. And there was a DeSantis lawyer today, it's Monday, we're talking. DeSantis lawyer said, well, no, that's not authorized. And I said in the tweet, well, may not be authorized, but they don't mind.
It's not authorized. It's not authorized, folks.
Yeah.
We're not unhappy about it, but it's not authored. We're not waiting for anything. Anyway, to be fair, they have to make sure that they are clear that he hasn't officially declared, because at that point,
Oh, yeah.
A whole lot of things that Ron DeSantis has.
Well, that's part of the problem with for Trump. This affects how he can spend the money. He's got over $100 million. He can raise more.
I know that he raised $150 million. I don't know how much of that he has left. Ron DeSantis raised over $200 million, and he's got close to $100 million of it left at the end of the cycle. So, I mean, that's another reason why, you know, Ron DeSantis is getting into this, because he saved enough money to start funding a real presidential campaign.
Yeah, exactly. That's the kind of
money that you have to have.
But Trump, surprisingly, not surprisingly, maybe, but he didn't dole out a whole lot of money. He gave some money to that foundation that Mark Meadows is running for him, but he wasn't out there funding House candidates all over the place.
Or Senate candidates, including the ones that he recruited, right? I mean,
yeah,
Ron Bolduc didn't get any of that money, or didn't get a lot of that money. Mehmet Oz didn't get a lot of that money. I don't think Adam Laxalt or Blake Masters got a lot of that money either. And that's something that he's been criticized for. But in part, I think that he was sheltering the money, because once he declared, and this is something I've mentioned a couple of times now, once he declared, the RNC has to stop paying his lawyers.
Yeah.
He's been paying his lawyers. This is millions and millions of dollars.
Millions, yeah.
That they've been paying out as part of an agreement to support Donald Trump after he left office. So it won't be regarding things like the Stormy Daniels thing. It won't be regarding, because that's coming up again. I don't know if you saw that. Manhattan DA's office wants to reopen that whole Stormy Daniels payoff case.
And they're really after Trump any way they can get him.
You know, the problem with that is this, is that they're all looking for a way to disqualify him, is basically what this is. Because if you can convict him of a felony, he's disqualified. The problem is that it's so transparent that all it does is just tick everybody off, and they feel an impulse to rally around it. At least up until recently, they feel an impulse to rally around him against that, because it's abusive and people recognize it as abusive. And
Americans have an innate sense of justice, fairness, and once you get over that, no matter what the party, once you get over that, it's like, I don't know, you know. And that's the way they reacted against Republicans who went after Clinton so much, and the impeachment over Monica in 98. And that came back and bit them in the behind in that midterm. So it's a mess. And I think a lot of people, the people who voted for Biden, or a lot of them, were tired of the mess and the chaos. And now there's more mess and chaos, and there will be even more now that Trump is back in it. And I think even some people who really like him are saying, well, you know, it's time to move on. And if I was DeSantis or whomever else wants to run, I wouldn't do anything for some months. Let the dust settle. Let Trump go out and do whatever he wants to do. So I don't think we're looking for DeSantis or anybody to do anything before next summer at the earliest. This is historically the earliest. Until now, Elizabeth Warren was the earliest. It was like New Year's. Talk about a bad time to announce. It was New Year's holiday. Yeah,
that was strange. That was strange, too.
Almost 2 years before the election. And Obama and Clinton did it in February, almost 2 years before the election. Bush did it in July, the year before the election. Clinton did it in October. And John Kennedy, he did it on January 3rd of the election year. That's where we sort of started this cycle. And now it's been getting earlier and earlier and earlier.
Yeah, you know, earlier and earlier and earlier. And I think it tends to water it down more and more and more, because you know, one of the things that I think DeSantis is going to have to get in earlier than early summer. And I want to explain why, because I want it to lead into another conversation I want to have with you, which is what happens to the rest of the field. Now, you know, there's no Republican incumbent in the White House. So it's a free for all. Usually is, you know, Democrats had what, 17 people in 2019 trying to jump
in. We had 17 in 2016.
In 2015, right?
Yeah, 2015 and 16, yeah.
In the precursor to that. So on one hand, you kind of expect that to happen again. Everybody who's got any sort of presidential ambition or some sort of political axe to grind, right? Some sort of agenda to get across. Traditionally, you do that through a presidential, a presidential bid just to get some attention. And then, you know, you're hoping for lightning in a bottle, but basically what you want to do is just sort of get some attention. And there's going to be probably some of that, right, on the Republican side. But I think that if Trump is in and DeSantis gets in early, I think that might squeeze some other people out. Yeah, not everybody, yeah. But I think some people are going to look at this and say, maybe we should just let DeSantis fight Trump for this time. I mean, I think Mike Pence is committed to it, so I don't think he'll get out, but he should, because there's really no room in that primary for Mike Pence. If you like the Trump area, you're going to vote for Trump. You know, Mike Pence is not a Trump, you know, it very clearly doesn't want to be a Trump surrogate in that sense. And if you don't want a Trump restoration, you'll go with Ron DeSantis, right? Who's still MAGA enough. He's very, very good with populism, but he's got, you know, this track record of accomplishment in Florida. Plus, he's only 44 years old, so he's younger. He's more appealing. His family's younger. They're more appealing, etc. But the more that people get into this, the more that muddies up the picture, and of course, the more that might split the whatever anti-Trump vote there is in the primary. So I want to ask you, do you think that Republicans are disciplined enough to try to hold back, especially if Ron DeSantis gets in early, and say, you know what, let's let these two guys slug it out in this cycle. They're the two guys that we need to have in this, yeah. And we need to have a clean cut choice here. Or do you think everybody gets in just because it's?
No, I don't. I don't think we. I don't think we get 17 again. But I think there will be a few. If I was doing it, I'm not, obviously, but if you're right and DeSantis gets in late spring or early summer, there's no rush to get in and be a target for someone else. You know, I mean, you just see how it goes. And if DeSantis starts to fly high or continues to fly high, stay out. Because you don't want to burn up your newness, your refreshing. I haven't gone through this before, but if he stumbles or some stuff comes out of the closet, I don't think other Republicans will be as immune to bad potential scandals or skeletons as Trump was. I mean. He said once I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and they'd still vote for me. And I don't think he was very far off. I said this in the column Sunday, and I'm going to say it again. I probably said it on the show. I will be forever impressed with Trump. If a Fifth Avenue billionaire lives in a penthouse, and out of 17 Republicans, he was the only one who sensed, detected the simmering frustration and anger with both establishments all across the country, not the coast, but all across the country, and tapped into it and spoke for it. And to me, that accounts for a lot of the loyalty, the lingering loyalty, the stubborn loyalty, I call it once, that his base has for him, because he's the one guy who spoke out against both establishments and, you know, the swamp and all of that. So he's, for a rookie, he was a hell of a politician.
I agree. I mean, I don't like the guy, but I voted for him twice because the first time reluctantly, the second time pretty enthusiastically, because I like the policies of his of his terminology.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Me too. The policies and the achievements, they're stunning. I don't remember a president who did so much in such a short time. Personally, he's a jerk. And he treated his staff, treated people who were loyal to him and worked hard for him, and he just dumped them. I remember, what was the name of his first press secretary, that nice guy?
Sean Spicer.
Yeah.
Ended up on
Sean Spicer, a devout Catholic, and Trump kept him out of the meeting with the Pope. Now, I just thought that was mean.
Very small.
Yeah. Very small, yeah. So there's a lot to, he's a jerk personally, but you know what? I loved Eisenhower. I don't know if there's any other president that I really loved or admired. And I couldn't vote for Eisenhower, but so you don't have to like the president, but I think you need to respect them. And there haven't been some recently that I respected that much.
Yeah, you know, I sometimes wonder if we're not in a post-World War II era that is, or not post-Cold War, excuse me, era that is going to end up being defined as sort of the post-Civil War era for presidencies, in which sort of like, it was like the era of mediocrities until you get to Roosevelt. Yeah. You know, I think Grant probably deserves more credit than he gets.
Yeah.
After that, you know, it's like 30 years before you get to, or close to 30 years, I guess, before you get to Teddy Roosevelt. And it's pretty much a procession of mediocrities. And I'm kind of wondering if we're not just living through the same.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. And he wasn't elected when he became president. But, there was except for Cleveland's two split terms, I think it was pretty much all Republican until Wilson, right?
Yeah. Yes. Cleveland was the exception.
Yeah.
And
so the Republicans with the Civil War and the Reconstruction, I mean, Grant was sending in federal troops to protect blacks so that they could vote.
Right.
And that got him a lot of creds, street creds, I think.
Yeah, you know, he had some corruption issues in his presidency, but he wasn't corrupt. He had some people that he relied on that were corrupt, and it really tarnished his image. But I think it was Charles Lane. I know it was Charles Lane who wrote a really good book about the start of the Secret Service and how Ulysses S. Grant tasked them with fighting the KKK. And the book calls it America's First War on Terror. It's a really good book. Charles Lane used to write at the Washington Post, who's at the New Republic. I think he's doing his own thing now. I think he's still a columnist at the Washington Post. But he was the guy who ended up having to clean up after Stephen Glass at the New Republic too. I mean, Charles Lane's got a pretty long and interesting and distinguished journalistic career. This book is really good. I wish I could remember the name of it off the top of my head. But, you know, I would say Grant deserves to be remembered better than he has been. But yeah,
he had he was always smoking cigars. He got throat cancer. That's what he died of. And I have a picture in my files the Friday before he died of him sitting on the porch. He had just finished his memoirs.
Yep.
And by the way, if you want to read something moving, I've forgotten the title of it, but it's a collection of the letters between him and his wife when he was in the army. And, you know, you think of him as a hard drinking, kill the other guy, like a James Mattis kind of general. But these letters are very romantic and loving. It's a refreshing look at the other side of a man.
Well, yeah. You see that a lot. Wasn't that, didn't they feature some of those letters in that Ken Burns?
They may have, yeah.
Oh, and the name of the book was Freedom's Detective. Freedom's detective, the Secret Service, the Ku Klux Klan, and the man who masterminded America's first war on terror. And Grant comes across very well in this book. The guy who had this headed the Secret Service doesn't. He's one of history's characters. And I got to tell you, it's a really entertaining book. You should, I would highly recommend. I interviewed Charles. I interviewed him on Relevant Radio, and I think I interviewed him on my podcast as well about
what,
this.
What book. Was it? The History's Detective?
Freedom's Detective.
Freedom's Detective.
Freedom's Detective. It's a fun book. Anyway, to get back to the point, I think we're dealing with the sort of an era of mediocrities. I think the last president you could say was great was Ronald Reagan, and it's because he had a great conflict in front of him. He had the Cold War. Unfortunately, we might end up back in a conflict here, or at least a conflict era again, thanks to Russia and maybe China, and it might produce better leadership. And I think it won't be the guy who's in the White House at the moment. So I think it would behoove us to look past the people who've already sort of run for this office and look for some new, fresh leadership. And I think that would actually behoove both parties, right? And, this is something.
There's an inertia in these things. I mean, you see it in the Democrats in Congress. They get in, they want to stay in, they want to cling to it beyond the time when they should. And it stifles the younger generation. And don't forget, 2010 was a wipeout by Republicans, that midterm.
Right.
And they wiped out nearly 1,000 state legislators, some of whom would have been rising up and been competing for governor and senator and the House in the ensuing years. But they never got to because they were snuffed. Because Obama wasn't a party leader. Obama was an Obama leader.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because one of the things that popped up on my radar screen today was a story, I think it may have been the Associated Press, may have been somebody else, reporting that, what's really interesting. Oh, I think it was Washington Post. What's really interesting is this is the first time the party, first midterm in which the party in power hasn't lost any state legislative bodies, right? Because they didn't have a hell of a lot to begin with. They've never recovered from the 2010 election.
That's right.
I mean, there has been very little movement in control of state legislatures ever since that 2010 election. So
because of the 2000 election, the Republicans controlled so many state legislative chambers and seats that they could control redistricting for two decades, for 2010 and 2020. So they made sure that their people were in at least fairly safe districts. And that was a big price. And Obama hasn't paid, he doesn't get blamed sufficiently in my mind for his lack of party leadership there.
Yep, I agree. All right, well, we're coming to the end of our podcast, but now we're going to find out joke of the week that Andrew has.
I've
the beginning of the show.
I have some jokes, but the one from today, I just love it. You know, that annually the president, whomever it is, pardons two turkeys and they get to go off and live a great life at Disneyland or somewhere. So today, Biden did that. The turkeys were called Chocolate and Chip. And of course, he then did a riff about chocolate being his favorite ice cream. Yeah. He turned to the turkey grower, and Joe Biden today said, how many turkeys are you raising? And the man's name was Parker. He said, our Circle S ranch grows about 9.5 million turkeys a year. Yeah, that's fun. And yeah. Biden says, God love you, 9.5 million turkeys. I tell you what, that's like some of the countries I've been to. What? What does that even mean? I mean, if you're in another country that he's recently visited, you think we're turkeys? What? Yeah. What does that even mean? And, why would he say it? Because he thinks it's a real quip. thinks it's a very clever quip. And to me, that's what says that
he's not there anymore.
No, yeah. He's not all there anymore because, I had a grandfather who did that.
He was never all there, but he was
never all there, but he isn't all there now. He's even less all there now. Yeah. I had a grandfather who, he'd be out on the porch, a screened in porch, the old fashioned front porch.
Oh yeah.
And he'd be showing me how to whittle because he lived in the country. And 10 minutes later, he'd be angry as hell and yelling at me. I don't know, it's just, and it was hardening of the arteries. But then his wife, my grandmother, would make him, as you could hear her talking to him in the kitchen, and he would come out and very sheepishly apologize. He had no clue what he was apologizing for because.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I see that in Joe. They say things that are inappropriate. They don't have a filter anymore.
Right.
Anyway, there's a couple of other jokes, Ed. We got, these are oldies. Jay Leno, he says, a British woman claims she has an orgasm every time she sneezes. Know what she's taking for it? Pepper. and Conan O'Brien said that President Obama is having his first state dinner, and it will be for the Prime Minister of India. Guests are encouraged to wear a black tie and bring any laptops with tech problems. they're good. They're not so good anymore. That's why I'm going. That's why I go back to the oldies. They're just they're good ones.
And speaking of the oldies,
have you got a physical update on Jay Leno?
Yeah, he's out of the hospital. I think it's radar. I saw it on radar. There's a picture of him. He posed with nurses. He's got a little scarring around his face and neck, and hopefully that'll heal up. But he's smiling. He's looking good, and he's out of the hospital. So. Happy Thanksgiving to
as long as that chin didn't melt.
Nope. Chin's still there. Still looking, still got the Jay Leno chin. So, yeah.
God bless him. Yeah. He's a good man.
Well, God bless you and your family at Thanksgiving, your second Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I feel ripped off. I only get one Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Ed, if you don't have the heritage, I'm sorry. You're on your own.
I want a redistribution of Thanksgiving. All right, Andrew. Thanks so much for being with us today. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, we will. Thanks, Ed. Thanks, everybody. Happy holiday.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Stay tuned for one more message from the Ed Morrissey Show coming up next. Thanks for watching and listening to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. I just want to drop you a note to remind you that we are still going into 2024 with guns blazing, if you will, and with all sorts of momentum going towards Republicans. Even after a disappointing midterm cycle, there is plenty of reason to be hopeful about what's coming up in 2024. There is also plenty of reason to worry about the impact that big tech and government agencies like DHS are going to have on the political debate, especially on big social media platforms. That's why it is still more important than ever to support Hot Air and our other town hall properties by becoming a VIP or a VIP Gold member. Now, being a VIP member or VIP Gold member means that you can comment on the posts. And the comment sections are getting very lively, great comment sections. We're really getting a good commentary out there in the com boxes. But you also get exclusive content such as Dwayne Patterson's twice weekly columns, Tom Jackson's twice weekly columns from Florida, which is going to be a key battleground in 2024 and a key indicator, especially if Ron DeSantis does get into the race, as we expect, of where the Republican Party is going to go. We've got The Amiable Skeptics with Adam Baldwin and I, twice weekly, two episodes a week, our video presentation exclusive for VIP members. Plus, we have the VIP Gold Chat with Cam Edwards of BearingArms.com. It's the most fun hour of the week. And I can tell you that both Cam and I will every single time make that claim. The most fun hour of the week, and our VIP Gold members get a chance to participate in it by putting in their comments and questions, and we respond directly to those. In fact, that's the entire reason for having that 1 hour chat on Wednesdays at 1:30 Eastern time. If you're a VIP or VIP Gold member, you can be part of that, and you can use the promo code SAVE America, and get a 25% discount off of VIP and VIP Gold membership. So be sure to do that. Thanks for your time. Thanks for watching The Ed Morrissey Show.